Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. First and foremost, thank you for the organization of Game Dev Jam to have me here. It's great to be speaking about what I've been doing, considering that I come from here. So key learnings from a decade of MMORPGs, it's a bit more than that. It's going to be a bit more than the learnings that I've had over my 11 years in Funcom and how the industry has changed at that time and how we're adapting to things after these 11 years. My name is Rui Casais. I'm now the CEO of Funcom, but I had an interesting history, and it looks like there will be an interesting history here as well. Maybe it's going to sleep. Yes, it's going to sleep. There. Yeah, I just need to be touching it, I think. First, a bit about Funcom. Some of you might have heard about us. We've launched The Longest Journey in 1999, and then Dreamfall in 2004. Anarchy Online, the first Western sci-fi MMO in 2001. I myself almost lost a semester because of that. So I almost failed the semester. Then in 2008, we launched Age of Conan, another massive multiplayer online role-playing game, MMORPG. In 2012, we launched The Secret World. And then end of last year and this year, LEGO Minifigures Online. So all these, do I have a pointer? I have a pointer somewhere, but not here. All these are MMORPGs. And the fact is that the industry has been changing, and Funcom has not been doing well. So at peak, during Age of Conan, we were around 600 people. Now we are around 100, and the MMORPG market has changed, while World of Warcraft itself has lost a lot of players over the years. And what we see is that the industry has moved on. So as part of a new strategy that I'm putting in place, we have started on a new type of games, called the first of which is called The Park. And I'll talk about that a bit more further down the line. A bit more about myself. So I started in Institut Supérieur Technique, taking a degree there. I went to Sweden in the middle of it. Little did I know that I would end up spending a lot of years afterwards in Scandinavia. I came back, finished my degree, worked with some European student organizations. I've always wanted to get involved with things outside of Portugal, be more of an European involved person. Then right after finishing my degree, went to Funcom in Oslo, where I was working as an artificial intelligence programmer, went to become the lead programmer on Age of Conan. 2008, we launched Age of Conan, and I'm promoted to be the chief technical officer, working on technology, not just for a game, but for the whole company. And then moved to Montreal in Canada in 2009 to open a new studio there, that would be focusing on leveraging the lots of people, lots of game development experience in Montreal to create new games. Was there for a couple of years. Launched Secret World in 2012, and then started on LEGO Minifigures Online back in Oslo. Launched it in 2014, 15. It was a bit of a strange period. And then this year, a few months ago, I became a CEO of Funcom. So it's a bit of an unusual path in that I started as just a programmer, as a junior programmer with 1 year of contract. And eventually, I'm now there for 11 years, and I'm the boss. So I don't claim to know everything, because I don't. What I do know is that making games is really hard. And I think everyone here will understand that. And it's hard because the market keeps on changing. What was games 20 years ago, or 10 years ago, or today, or tomorrow, it keeps on changing. When you talk to, and I've been noticing this more the last year, when you talk to people in other industries, like one of the people that own Funcom, they make money out of big boats that carry coal between Asia and Europe. They don't understand that every time we talk to them, something has changed. For them, it's a boat. It carries coal from one place to the other. How can it be so difficult? Well, yeah, we need to teach that to them every time. They were like, yeah, but last time we talked, you were talking about web games, and now we're talking about mobile games. Yeah, things change. So the market keeps on changing. The technology goes through leaps and bounds, and we are the ones causing it. It's games that push the technology, and technology changes all the time. What's possible and not possible is radically different now than 10 years ago. And 10 years from now, what now we think is cool and exciting, like VR, is probably going to be mainstream. So what will be the cool new thing in 10 years? We can only guess. And our industry, I guess game development, is extremely young. It's young in the sense that there are lots of opportunities, yes, but it's young in the sense that we don't really know what we're doing. We're random people in a basement somewhere trying to make the next hit. It's like Hollywood 150 years ago. it's the wild west of development. There are no standard practices. There are no routines. There's very little that is structured and procedural and constant. Going a bit more in detail, I have a couple of charts here that are quite good to illustrate what we're seeing. And we see here the amount of money per area of the world. Now, 10 years ago, Asia was a blip here. You had Japan, you had a bit of Korea, but that was it. Now, out of $43 billion of games that will happen this year, half of it is China. And China is growing by 23% in terms of gaming. It means that you cannot ignore Asia if you think globally. But it also means that the other markets are very well known. North America and Europe are markets that are stable. They have slight growth, mainly because of mobile. We'll get to that in a second. But they are markets that are a bit easier to predict. And then you have the poorer areas of the world, South America and Africa, that right now they don't really matter in here. But 30 years down the line, they probably will matter. So what we see here is that things have changed dramatically in the geographically where people play games. The other interesting thing in this chart is that 78% of all money is digital. It's non-physical game sales. When I went to Funcom, all the games were bought in a box in a store. There was piracy. That's how we got the game illegally. And MMORPGs were doing some digital distribution. So Anarchy Online, you could go to the Funcom webpage at the time and buy it and download it. But very few games did that. Now it's the opposite. Another interesting way of looking at it is the growth of each segment. So if you see here, green is computer screens. Blue is mobile or personal screen. Pink is floating screen, so both a DS or an iPad. And gray is TV screen or entertainment screen. And VR is they consider it there. And what we see is that, yes, mobile or personal screen is growing by 50% from, these are estimates, projections, 2015 to 2018, the market is going to grow from $20 to $30 billion. 50% growth is super impressive. But if you look at it, PC and console are still bigger. So there's a lot of hype and a lot of ideas about mobile games being huge, and they are. But don't underestimate the other markets. Do your research. Even the floating screen, you can say, well, tablet and handheld games are tiny. Well, they're tiny in proportion to the other ones. But they are a very relevant amount of money that is being spent. If you capture that money, you're well off. So the market keeps on changing. Of course, 10 years ago, there was no such thing as the personal screen. There were DSs, there were consoles, and there were PCs. Now you have a lot more. And I'm sure that in a few years, the virtual reality devices will be a dedicated entry in this chart. Technology. My background is it's a technical background. So of course, I've been following this quite closely. So what we see is that where 10 years ago, if you wanted to make a game, you used C++. Now you can use a number of languages. You have Objective-C for iOS. You have Java for Android. You have .NET for Unity and other cross-platform initiatives. You have ActionScript for Flash games. You have JavaScript for web games. Python is used both as scripting language. And so there are some games made in Python, but normally it's a scripting language. And same thing with Lua. These are the languages underneath the middlewares, the Unity, Unreal, Marmalade, GameMaker, CryEngine, IDTech, Source, the Valve engine, Stingray, the new Autodesk engine. You know, there are a lot of engines out there. And on top of it, there are then the platforms that keep on exploding. It used to be Windows. No one used to play games on a Mac or Linux. So it used to be Windows. It used to be Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo. Those three, and maybe some very simple web flash games. Now you have, in terms of platforms, Windows, Mac, Linux. The LEGO Minifigures Online, the game we launched on Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, and Android. And it is a lot of work to get a game launched on day one on five platforms. You have web. There's still a lot of money being made on web games, HTML5 and Flash. Don't underestimate the power, the money in Flash games. You have the console makers, Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation. You have then the new platforms, the augmented reality with HoloLens and the 3D, the VR platforms, Oculus, Morpheus, HTC Vive, There's also Star VR, and there are a few more. We'll see which ones survive, which ones die, but there are a few of those. The point is, technology doesn't stop evolving. What was 10 years ago isn't now, so it's tough. It just makes something that's already hard to make, which is how do we make a fun and engaging experience for players, even harder, because you don't really know, should I use C++ or should I do a Java game or should I do a .NET game, but that means I need to run on a virtual machine which might have performance problems across multiple devices, and is the PlayStation going to run a .NET game? Probably not. Then, you know, you have all these questions you need to answer besides the fact of which game am I going to make. You need to know, what am I going to use to make it? Again, it's not the boat. Technology for making a boat is pretty solid by now. We're not trying to figure out which trees to use to make a boat. That's been solved. And the other part, the industry being young, there are several points here. The pipeline of production, think again Hollywood or think the car industry, those people know that there are the people that make these parts and the people that make those parts, and together it makes a car. We're still trying to figure out, are we developers? But if we are developers and we sell our game in an app store, that doesn't mean we're publishers. So who does the marketing? Is it me, because I'm publishing my own game? Or do I engage with a publisher, a traditional publisher, because I want their marketing expertise? And in this, are there distributors? Well, Steam is a distribution channel, but so is Deep Silver, because it's a brand that prints a game on DVD. Are they the same category of distributors? What does that mean for me making my game? And then if I'm making a game for Disney, am I a developer, or am I a work for hire, or am I a consultant, or what am I? What am I doing here? What's my expertise? And companies that have been doing one thing keep on changing what they are doing. Funcom started as a work for hire game developer making console ports of games for Disney in the 90s, and made very small Pocahontas and ports like that. And then eventually went into adventure games, went into MMORPGs, and now we're trying to reinvent ourselves. So in this industry, again, it's not just which game am I going to make, who's going to sell it or buy it, which technology am I going to use, but what's my part in the whole process? What am I going to do? What's someone else going to do? 10 years ago, it was simple. It was, there's a developer, there's a publisher. Publisher and developer agree, give you X amount of millions of dollars. You make a game. The publisher doesn't pay you on time because it will say that you didn't deliver on the milestone. And you get annoyed at the publisher. There's a lot of back and forth. And no one gets happy. And the game that's not very good gets out, released too early with bugs. That's how it was 10 years ago, which obviously wasn't a good process, but it was simpler. Come on. Another point is that financing is changing. How do you get money for your game? Well, besides parents paying, like someone said, they were funding based on their parents, it used to be the publisher model. Now, venture capitalists, VC funds, they're very common in the tech industry. It's also common in games, but less talked about, where someone puts in a seed round X amount of millions of dollars for X of your company. There's loans. There are normal bank loans. There are government loans that help startups and companies doing their things. There's crowdfunding, of course, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and the other one I can't remember, funded by me, and all those, and the new one that was game-specific, can't remember the name. Self-funding, of course, and combination of these. So again, I have this game I want to make, but how am I going to pay for it? There are more options. More options is good, but it also makes you spend more time trying to figure out how to do it. Next. Business models. And this has been talked about throughout the day in multiple sessions here, so I don't need to talk much about it. But how you're going to make money out of your game is a big discussion. And we see now that advertising, for example, is something that's being interesting again. Miniclips Games, for example, they don't really charge money. They have ads. That's how they make money. Anarchy Online was the first game in the West that used advertising to pay for free players. It was the first Western MMO to go free to play, to have an in-game shop, and to use advertising. And then advertising went bust 2 years later, and there was a period of like 7 years where no one talked about advertising in games. And then mobile games started to pick up speed. iAd from Apple was implemented, and advertising started to get back as an acceptable thing. At the same time, we started getting ads in YouTube videos and it became normal to have ads on the internet, and then advertising came back. So now it is being considered again as a viable business model. Maybe it'll go bust again in 2 years. You never know. The industry is more global than ever. You saw that the money being made in games in the different continents is quite big, but that's not just where people are buying it, it's where people are making games. It means that it's very unlikely that when you're making a game right now, you can find everything you need for your game in your country, or even in your continent. It's very common that you're in Portugal and you work with a sound contractor that is in the Philippines, and the guy that you know at Microsoft that can help you get exposure in the store is in the UK, and then there's someone in California that you need to talk to, or there's a cultural, cross-cultural exchange that happens that can be said it's very good for exchange of ideas, but, and I've experienced this myself many times during Funcom, sometimes you think you're saying something to the other person and the other person doesn't get it. Not because they don't speak English or the language you're using, and that happens, but because culturally they don't get your joke, they don't get your sarcasm or your irony or the hints that you're giving, just because culturally they are different. And in Funcom at Peak, we had 43 different nationalities in our Oslo office. And I started realizing in my team, I had 10 different nationalities of programmers. And it got complicated because those guys never laughed at the jokes that those guys made. And it becomes more difficult to manage a team. It becomes more difficult to cooperate. And it should not be underestimated that there is a productivity impact, a high productivity impact from having cross-cultural teams. And there is a creativity impact, positive, from having those teams. But it is something that needs to be considered. Not just that, time zone. If anyone here have worked with people more than 6 hours away in time zone, you know that it's a pain. I need to have like a virtual, not a virtual, a finger here touching. The rubbing finger. Time zone can keep us up at night or wake really early up in the morning. And collaborating across continents technically can be quite difficult. Suddenly, the game that is a 5 gig zip that you can just give to your coworker over the local network or a USB drive, if you have to send that multiple times per day to California, it becomes time consuming. Like the game we're working now, first build we made had 8 gigs in size. Okay, well, whatever. But then our QA team that is in North America said, yeah, that's going to take a couple of hours to copy, so we lose 2 hours of time testing every day. Then you start to have to schedule that, okay, maybe we'll upload the version late at night so that when you're in, it's there, and you need to do all this management because the tools that we have are starting to take this into account, but you're not really made for it. Even distributed source control systems and all those things are meant for you to use in an office or in offices somewhat physically close together. And last, management processes are very immature. Project management is bad. There are a lot of people that become managers that don't have a management background. Me, I don't have a management background. I've tried to educate myself, but you know, it's not people that have graduated out of business management school to organize and run the typical producer role of these projects. It's people that want to make games, and that they go about making games. And then there's poor control of time, cost, and efficiency. Suddenly, we thought this was going to take a month, but it took 3. And suddenly, we need more money for pizza because we've run out. And suddenly, someone said very inappropriate, and you get sued if you're in the US because of sexual harassment, because there are no HR procedures. Maybe you suddenly see that your costs have overrun, so you're not going to have free coffee in the office anymore. And morale goes down the drain. Big tip, never mess with the coffee, okay? Have good coffee, it's the last thing to go. Never mess with the coffee, it's not worth it. And yes, I've learned this the hard way. And our processes, the process for getting versions to QA, to a publisher, to a producer, to a whatever, are very ad hoc. They're very things we come up with because we think they make sense at that point in time, not necessarily things that we know will work. There's been a push towards agile project management and Scrum and those things. And those come from more the IT software engineering side. They don't necessarily apply 100% by the book to gaming. They aren't gaming specific processes yet. Hollywood has a process. I'm sure Audi has a process. Toyota is famous for their Toyota way of doing management with their Kanban boards and all that. But games don't have a production process yet. With all this, it sounds pretty bleak. But you should see these difficulties as challenges, as things that can give us space to thrive somehow. And how is that? New markets? South America maybe becomes a big market. The first person to crack that market and have a really good game there will make a lot of money. It doesn't mean that you'll make $1 billion, but if it is growing, why not target it? For Portugal, it's a language very close to Portuguese, of course, the Spanish countries, and of course Brazilian is the same language with tweaks. So why not? Think about not just the global. It's easy to say that we make games and we sell them to the whole world, but you don't really. You normally make games and you sell to the Western world, Europe, North America. If you think hard about it, some companies do Europe, North America, Russia, and plan for Asia at some point. No one makes games for South America right now. No one makes games for Southeast Asia. No one makes games for the Middle East. Egypt, I read a great article from some guys in Egypt that made a game that was only popular in Egypt, but they made lots of good money with it. Think about the markets geographically as opportunities that haven't been tackled yet. And the gaming market has been growing. You saw the chart. And that means that, yes, the number of games being launched keeps on increasing. Yes, there are 500 games being launched per day on iOS, which is a staggering amount of games. But it also means there's a bigger pie. And not everyone will make millions of dollars. A lot of us just want to make enough game money to make the next game because we like what we're doing. We want to earn a living out of it, but we don't need to be billionaires. That would be a nice side effect. But that is not the goal. The goal is to enjoy what we're doing and survive doing it. So bigger market means there's bigger pie. It also means that those tiny things that no one thought would ever make money are suddenly viable. There are these games on Steam that are the garbage truck simulator and the farming simulator and the whatever simulator. And I was looking it up this week because we did a game jam in Funcom 2 weeks ago internally. And one of the guys likes remote-controlled helicopters. Not drones, but the helicopters that you actually need to have skill to control. And he made a helicopter simulator. And I was like, but this will never make money. And well, are you sure? Because there are lots of simulator games on Steam. So I went to Steam Spy. If you should know what Steam Spy is, go there. Check simulator games. You'll be surprised. There are a lot of them that are just clones of each other. And they sell around 20,000 units. But that company that makes them outputs them every 3 months. So they sell 20,000 units on Steam every 3 months. It's a tiny niche, but with time, the niche is going to grow because more people are playing games. What other niches are there that are suddenly viable now that weren't viable 10 years ago? I'm not sure, but they are there. New technologies, and this is quite important, new technologies allow us to release ourselves from the technology work, and we can focus on gameplay. Unity, Unreal, whatever engine out there, allows people that are not as technical, the designers, the artists, the creatives, to sit down and make cool gameplay. So when you choose a technology, you should see, which people do I have? Do I have lots of tech heads that want to make some really cool stuff that is new and really pushing the limits? Or do we have people that are less technical and they want to iterate and prototype on that gameplay and get something really cool that way? And then based on that, you can choose the technology. So you can now adapt the technology choice to the people you have, which wasn't possible 10 years ago because it was C++. That's all you did. New languages, more expressive power. This is more a programming thing, but the new languages being used are normally easier to use, allow you to write more logic per time unit. So in 1 hour of coding, you write more instead of looking at memory errors in C++ and things like that. So it overall, it's part of the previous topic as well. I still do the coding in C++, but that's because now I'm starting to get old school, which is weird. And the evolving industry, our industry being young, also means that we can be first movers. We can be the ones that find that process, the ones that are able to find out how to cooperate efficiently with people from other places or whatever. We can be the ones that shape the industry to be efficient going forward. And this is all very nice and generic, but really, what should I do? What should you do as a game developer, or a potential game developer, or someone that are somehow involved in making games? I think this is very important. Pick your niche. And you can say, well, the big guys don't pick niches. Well, they do. Grand Theft Auto is a niche. FIFA is a niche. People that like hockey don't normally like soccer that much. They're just big niches. Think of niches as market segments and find the one that your team really cares about, and a niche that is right now not dominated. Because there are so many, it's hard to go compete with League of Legends right now. The same way that it's been hard for Funcom to compete with World of Warcraft. Don't do that mistake that we've been doing. Find a niche, find an area that where you can be the dominant person if you crack it, if you get it right. Find the baseline. This means look at the other games in that space. If you look at MMOs, I'm going to use World of Warcraft because it's what I've been working with. World of Warcraft set the baseline. Any MMO launched after World of Warcraft had to have the same features that World of Warcraft had. Worse, it's not just that. It had to have the same features that World of Warcraft had when your game launches, which might be 4 years later. WoW launched at the end of 2004. Age of Conan launched in middle of 2008, 3.5 years later. We were compared to WoW in 2008. So you're always fighting a losing game, because you're trying to get all the features of a baseline that keeps on moving. So when you look at the market, see who's the dominant here. Am I going to compete with League of Legends, or World of Tanks, or Candy Crush Saga? Because if I'm going to compete with Candy Crush Saga, you can, but you will need to be better, equal or better than Candy Crush on everything they do. If you go for a niche that is less populated, if you go for the simulator niche, do a garbage truck simulator and whatever, well, there's someone there already, but maybe the niche could be bigger if you have something better than the competition. I mean, those games have not very great reviews, so it's probably possible to make something better. I personally don't want to make a garbage truck simulator, but obviously someone does. Be careful with your risks. There are lots of things that are difficult right now. Identify what are the risks with your game, with your project, and don't bite more than you can chew. Take just the risks you can afford to do. Are you going to risk it with a new market, or with a new technology, or with a new platform? Are you going to go for VR with a new engine on a game genre that you've never done, collaborating with people across the world that you've never worked with? You shouldn't. Pick one. Two, pick things you can control. Don't take all of it. It doesn't work. I've done it. Secret World was a game that where we were developing in North Carolina, Montreal, Oslo, and Beijing, and it was a mess. It was a game that was supposed to be classless. You can do whatever you want with the game, and there was no game doing that. Didn't really work. It was a game competing with World of Warcraft, so a market that was very risky. Too many factors. LEGO Minifigures Online is very similar to that. It was our first kids game, first mobile game, what was it? First free-to-play game. Too many risks. Didn't work. Listen and manage your players and community. This is something that we now in Funcom have a problem with, because we've been around for 23 years. Funcom was established in 1993, and there is a reputation. There are people that like what we do, and there's people that don't like what we do. And there's people that were hoping Age of Conan or The Secret World to be different games, so they got disappointed. They feel angry, they feel ripped off. They will automatically, any game that we launch, they will say, oh, it's a Funcom game, it sucks. Don't ever mistreat your players, because it's hard to get out of that hole. We're working on it, and you can tell you, it's your players and community, they are everything. They are the guys that will defend you when you make a mistake. They are the one that will say, Yeah, but these guys, you know, they are just a nice, friendly indie guys. They're having pizza and living in their mom's basement. And maybe you never even said that. They'll just make up the stories to defend you. Your reputation is everything, and your reputation is your players. Listen to them. What do they want? What do they not want? It doesn't mean that you're always going to do what they tell you to, because most of the people that speak a lot online are not the majority. In our games, it's 5 to 10% of the people that play actively our games that speak in the forums, for example. So we know that we have to take what they say with a grain of salt. But still, if those people that speak a lot, if we get them, convert them to our cause, they will be super ferocious defending us. Pay attention to it. Even if it's a small mobile game, have your Facebook page, take good care of people there. You know, don't ban people without reason, ever. Always be nice to them. And eventually they send you donuts. The Secret World guys send to our dev team in North Carolina donuts or muffins once a month because they want you. So we just get free sugar because the players like what we're doing. And at the end of the day, that's what makes us stay and make video games, is because the players really enjoy what we're doing. Yes, of course, there's money involved. You want to have a good salary. You want to live your life. But people really like what you do. And finally, learn to let go. Ideas, there will be tons of ideas that will not work. There will be technology choices that are stupid and you only realize 6 months later. There will be markets that suddenly someone else comes in. Everyone thought that there was no future for card games on computers until Blizzard launched Hearthstone. You know, the Wizard of the Coast guys are screwed. They'll never capture that market, ever. So what should they do? Well, I'm not sure. I don't want to be in their shoes, but if you were making a card game, I would say, let it go. Take what you did there. Take your learning. See what did we do right. And maybe you make an RPG game that has a card game element to it. Maybe instead of having skills, you have cards. And instead of leveling up, you get a booster pack. Suddenly, you can reuse some of your ideas. You know, the point is, there's an expression in English, sometimes you have to kill your babies. It's a very brutal expression, but the point is there are things that you really care about, that you've been saying that this is the core element of the game, and it's going to be fantastic because we're doing this, and then suddenly you realize that it doesn't work. You test with 20 different people, 100 different people, and it doesn't work. Just give it up. Cut your losses. So it's nice to talk about this and all that, but how does this come from us? Well, we've been doing MMORPGs. I've been working with MMORPGs for 11 years, and my master thesis was a prototype MMORPG thing. So it feels odd to stop doing it. But what we have announced, what we've said to the market, we are a listed company, meaning we are in the Oslo stock market, so you know you can buy shares in us and all that. And we need to be careful with what we say. But what we've said to the market is that these days, what used to be MMORPGs is now broken down into smaller games. So you have League of Legends, World of Tanks. Those games have MMORPG elements. You could find that gameplay in World of Warcraft or Anarchy Online or whatever. Ark, the dinosaur sandbox survival game, it's basically an MMO's level with crafting. It's not much more than it. So what we're going to be doing is we in Funcom are going to be focusing what we've been doing right into smaller games. We're going to pick our niches. We're going to find what's the competition. And we're going to do all these things. And the first game in that is a tiny experiment that we started doing. It's like kind of an indie game inside Funcom, which is a horror single-player horror game using Unreal. We've always been using our own technology. And now we are playing around with Unreal to integrate with our technology and all that. But that's a bigger story. So we've decided to try this out. Oh, I forgot one point. Yeah. Last point, don't stop learning. Don't stop trying to understand how the industry works, which way is it moving to, and adapt. Because these points might change and become invalid a year down the line or 5 years down the line. Let's see if the video works. You might have seen this. It's the teaser trailer for our next game. If there's no sound, it won't. There's no sound. Without sound, there's no point. It's a horror game, so you need to have sound. Where is it? Mas eu acho que se calhar o som vem por aqui. No, there's no sound. Wait. Give me a second. How am I on time? Como é que estou de tempo?
Tens para aí 2 minutos.
Isso é uma
coisa. Ok, está.
Come on. I don't have a screen here.
Oh.
Sure, yes, whatever. Go away. No. Sad face. Well, that's okay. I'll just skip it. I'll try to put it at the end. Anyway, the point is, making games is hard. That was the beginning, but it is fun and rewarding. And I don't want to do anything else. Now, all of this is just what has happened. Look at when you look at games now, you think, oh, mobile is so big and VR is such a big thing. But look at how it has been, look at where it's going, look at the trends, think of it as a business. It will go somewhere, there will be crashes, but it will continue going in some direction. And if you want to be successful, you need to be slightly ahead of the curve, because being really ahead of the curve is really hard. But if you are slightly ahead of the curve, you will succeed. It might be because you're ahead of your niche, of your technology, of your market, of whatever it is, the gameplay. But if you're slightly ahead of the curve, maybe you're just really good at processes and you manage your projects to the cent, and they are on time, and that means that you are able to keep on going without sliding. I don't know, but you can do it. I fully believe you can. I'm working on getting Funcom to succeed now in a completely different market, and I can tell you that sometimes it feels like an indie, even though we're 100 people and we are listed on the stock market and all that stuff. It's still fun. A lot of late nights, a lot of salaries that aren't what they should be. But it's hard, it's fun and rewarding. Let's keep on doing it.